And my mama looked down at my feet and said, "Child, what's wrong with you? Come over here, child. Let me check you with your shoes." And she touched where the toe was, and she knew, like, "Girl, you can't fit those anymore." It's so much easier to hold on to what we know, even if it is painful, versus stepping out into the land of the unknown.
Hey, beautiful. This is Aminata Soul Plant Walker Firewoman, and I am the host of the Mother Tree Network, where spirituality and earth wisdom meet racial justice and women's leadership.
Good morning, gorgeous. I am here on the new moon. Happy Lunar New Year. Happy Lunar New Year. This is going to be a brief introduction because I don't have my real podcast equipment. But for this new lunar year, we are sharing with you an interview with JoJo Pa, Maria, and Saroma. This episode is actually two parts. In the first part, JoJo Pa and I have a conversation, and in the second part, JoJo Pa answers questions from the Mother Tree community. So in this episode, you're going to hear JoJo Pa talk about higher timelines, expanding consciousness. You're going to hear her talk about releasing our addiction to the pain body and enlarging the pain body. And as opposed to letting it shrink, she's going to tell us some tips for how to do that. One of the most important pieces of inspiration I get from JoJo Pa is that she reminds me that pain is a messenger. It is not the full message. It is a messenger getting your attention towards your healing and your expansion. She says the world is not here out here to get you. It's out here to gift you. And what's so cool is that, you know, JoJo Pa is my elder. So, and she's been through some stuff. And her ability to hold that perspective, to share and to teach from that wisdom, is so inspiring to me. So I hope you love this episode. I hope you come to love JoJo Pa as much as I do. Please look at the show notes for her bio to find out how you can connect with her on her YouTube channel. And like us. Follow us. Pass this episode on to someone who needs this information. And whatever you do, make sure you stay on to the part of the episode where we have the Q&A, because that's where JoJo Pa is going to tell us about how to build an altar, how to understand our ancestors, not this as the same as divine helpers, but different. She's going to talk to us about how to work with pain so that it is a teacher for us and something that elevates us rather than something that keeps us stuck. So stay on for the whole interview and pass it on to someone else who needs this perspective. We are in for a ride in 2024. All right, y'all. See you on the other side.
Welcome, welcome to the Mother Tree Network. I'm Aminata, Desert Rose Plant Walker Firewoman, and I am with the Queen, one of my favorite people, JoJo Pa, Maria, and Saroma. Hello, JoJo Pa.
Hello, Amanda. What a deep pleasure to see you, especially today.
Yeah, and we're going to get into that about today, because I know that this is an important astrological moment.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
How I like to start every interview, JoJo Pa, is with what is good. So tell me, for you today, what is good?
First thing that I was able to get up out of bed earlier than usual and not be in pain and not be in fear and not be in suffering, but actually to have my heart feeling full and being in anticipation of what this day would bring. Yes. Yes.
Wow. And I know for some of us, you know, that is a miracle to wake up without the fear and the pain and in anticipation of the day. And
absolutely,
you know, and you are a woman of purpose, a woman of a stature who's been around a minute. So so I'm assuming that it wasn't every day that you could wake up this way.
No, not at all.
Yeah,
not at all.
It was a journey that got you here.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And, you know, Jojo Pop,
yes.
That's really what I want to get into today. You know, I really want to, I told people when I was inviting them to come and be a part of this conversation, I told them that you were one of the most positive people in my life. And I have a lot of really positive people in my world because I've curated a world. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. So, yes.
Yeah. And every time I talk to you, you start with gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
So have you always been essential. That way?
No, you would not have recognized me years ago because I was very much walking my mother's path. In terms of, I have to be a strong, independent Black woman, and I've got to beat the man at his own game. And into that, for me, it was quasi-corporate grind of human services, national office situations, and very much living life as if that was my purpose. So one of competition. One of, I've got to be right, I've got to be first, and I've got to know it all, which is very much, you know, the monarchical dominance mentality of Europe and other places, but definitely from Europe. So I had no idea how deeply embedded my conditioning was in a reaction to ancestral wounds, to historical trauma. And so I was doing what I thought was the right thing to do. But thank goodness, because we're all given purpose, whether we know it or like it or not. And so I was never quite satisfied. I was a great achiever. I achieved a lot for, you know, just the English major degree I had, I would get into places of leadership. And it was never about me hunting for a job. It always came to me. People reached out to me, or if somebody knew somebody that said, you know, go here. But I can remember standing in my living room when I had made it. And I looked around at my beautiful furniture, beautiful surroundings, and I felt like a mess. It wasn't bringing me joy. And that began to open me up to the paradox. Why is that? Why is the external world so nice, so in order, but internally, I'm just feeling a mess? Yeah.
You know, in your book, Wisdom Walk to Self-Mastery, one of the stories that, and there are so many great stories, so I highly recommend this book, Wisdom Walk to Self-Mastery. One of the stories you tell is about these beautiful red Mary Janes that you had and how you did not want to give those up, even when they started to hurt your feet.
I love it. That's what I'm going through right now with my beautiful red Mary Jane color car that I love. Yeah, I love that story because, you know, there I am still squeezing into them and hurting. And my mama looked down at my feet and said, child, what's wrong with you? Come over here, child. Let me check you if you choose. And she touched where the toe was and she knew, like, girl, you can't fit those anymore. Take those shoes off. I got to buy you some new shoes. And I was just upset, you know. And I use that story as an analogy for how we, I don't care whatever growth opportunity comes, whether we have been working for it or not, when it's time, we just go into almost a panic, because it's so much easier to hold on to what we know, even if it is painful, versus stepping out into the land of the unknown and having to open up to the new. And, you know, it's also an analogy for what we're going through as a human species on the planet right now. We have no idea how much we have grown just over the last 25 years as a human species, but we're still operating out of these old paradigms, these old belief systems, you know, the trauma from historical pain and ancestral wounds. We really still are very much operating out of those paradigms and, you know, trying to make it work, trying to get it to fit, and it's not. So, yeah, there's a lot of grief, a lot of frustration, a lot of fear that people are dealing with right now because of that. And then you add on just the everyday challenges and adversities.
Right.
But yeah.
It's like we're outgrowing, like you said, outgrowing those old shoes, which
we've outgrown it.
Which may have been nice, or maybe they weren't even so nice. Like you had nice Mary Janes, but right. They could have been really beat up, ugly shoes.
Hey, beautiful. Would you benefit from a safe space where you can slow down and listen? Listen for what your ancestors have to say, what the earth has to say, what the divine has to say to you? If so, then head on over to my website, dramandakemp.com, and sign up for a complimentary sacred listening session. It's 30 minutes where you get to slow down and listen for the vibration of truth. I'll hold space for you. I'll light a candle for you, and together you can answer your questions. Look forward to seeing you.
One of the things I like about what you talk about, JoJoPa, is, first of all, I just want to be honest and say that, you know, I consider you a friend and a mentor, and you really have guided me, JoJoPa. And, one of the things that you've really helped me understand is the pain body. Like I think I may have heard the pain body in a yoga context, but okay. I never really knew what a pain body was until you started talking about it with me. And I saw how I was kind of addicted to my pain body or feeding my
yes.
pain. Can you say more about
yes.
that?
Sure. And thanks to Eckhart Tolle, who I consider a walk-in, he's just amazing, for that language and for that defining of any pain that we go through, any trauma pain that doesn't get addressed, doesn't get processed, either right after or shortly after it happens. That then gets kind of pushed down into our psyche and begins to form what we call a pain body. And pain body can also be considered the remnants of post-traumatic stress too. I will link it to that. It's not always as severe or as noticeable as post-traumatic stress symptoms can be, but it definitely is coming out of that because, you know, pain and, you know, all of what we are is energy. And Einstein said, energy cannot be destroyed, but it can be transformed. So when we don't address it, when we don't take on transforming it, then it's still around. And it's like if you put air into a balloon, put energy into a balloon, right? After a couple of days, what happens? That balloon is going to shrink because energy doesn't want to stay trapped. It wants to move. It wants to transform. And that's, to me, is the real gift in any kind of trauma pain we go through. Or any emotional pain we're carrying, we need to know it wants to come out. And so it will come knocking. You will get into the looping of a situation, maybe different players this time, maybe a different environment, but the pain you feel will be exactly that same pain. And it's like you keep going around the barn, you know, going around that cycle until finally you say, you know what? I'm ready to let this go. This isn't working for me anymore. And that the pain body really is happy when that happens to a degree, but it also gets conditioned. It wants to be fed. So then it'll start telling you, oh, you can't get rid of this. This is who you are, you know. And like you said, we start to identify with the pain. We start to think that we're a pain. We create a culture around the pain and give it license to keep us, right, not living in the full truth of who we are. And so the pain body, again, it's so important. It's so powerful to have that language and that understanding, because we can then take on transforming it and shifting it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is what my book is about.
It is.
Absolutely.
Wisdom Walk to Self-Mastery. And I want to, I think what's different about what you're saying, or maybe just what impacted me, was that, you're like, well, you were reminding me I have choice as to whether or not view a situation with a certain lens so that I can get a pain body hit.
Right, right.
Which is kind of crazy that I was trying to get a pain body hit. So that's one thing is I want people to think about if you keep feeling like people are bullying you, if you keep feeling like they don't appreciate you where you work, or, you know,
absolutely,
your partner doesn't listen to you, or whatever that repetitive thing is, perhaps you're reaching for something to give you a jolt of pain.
Absolutely. Keep you waddling in it.
Yeah. And then you said,
it's so much safer.
Well, it is. It's safer. It's familiar.
But it's destructive. It's familiar. It's safer, and it's destructive. And you know, healing is about a courage journey. It requires courage, patience, and persistence. Because to heal, you have to step into the unknown. You are not going to heal yourself with what you know. And this is why the role of a therapist, a really good therapist, is so important, because it's somebody who's not your family member. It's not your friend. So it's somebody who can be totally objective and somebody who can really help you navigate through into this new land, this new territory about who you really are. And that's what my therapist did for me. It was just amazing and so important, because I had come to the borders of what I knew about myself. I couldn't have imagined, like you said, judge by you, so much gratitude and so much love. And you know, I couldn't imagine myself like that. Not at all. But it was there waiting for me to access it. But I had to leave, you know, what I had outgrown by that time. I had to leave that behind. Yeah.
Mm. Yes. And I'm thinking about your book. You talk about Maladoma Somme and Sombunsen.
Yes,
Somme.
My teacher. Mm-hmm. Yes, my teachers.
Yeah. And the Dogara medicine and medicine wheel. And you are wisdom keeper in that tradition, right?
Yes, yes. And what does that mean? Well, you know, Maladoma Sombunsen, coming from Burkina Faso, the land of the great ancestors in West Africa, were given this task to bring this ancient wisdom into the Western psyche. And through lots of sacrifice and lots of not being, you know, in their village, in the comfort of their village, to have to come into a whole new world, a whole new experience of being a human. You know, it's just amazing. But what I learned from them is that this medicine chooses you and it wants to live. So despite imperialism that happened, the conquest of Africa by the Europeans, where they did like what they did here with the First Nations people, is tell them that your sacred ways, your religious practices are of the devil, and we're going to give you something that's not, you know, like their twisted version of Christianity, right? And so the medicine went underground. The medicine went underground. And for the fact that as much of it, the essence of it has been maintained and saved, is miraculous. So I'm honored that the medicine has chosen me, whose ancestors went through the African slave trade, to bring that medicine back into a form that's usable for who and what we are now. And so as a keeper, that is my job, is how do I use the medicine? Because I can't do what you could do in Africa. I'm just not in that environment. I don't have the levels of support I would need, right? So it's not so much as let me replicate this, but it's let me take the essence of it and let me use it for today. And that's what my book represents, the way in which I structure it and present it. That's using the medicine for today. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think your book goes beyond traditional talk therapy. Because that can only get us so far.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It's really healing, like I said, that going on a journey into a whole new realm, a whole new world, really isn't an intellectual exercise. It really requires going through a change process that you can't know. There's no scripting, and it really is being present to what is going on as it's going on. And that's something in modern culture we don't do. We spend a lot of time angsting about the future or staying stuck in the past. We have our flashes of being present, especially when we're doing something with our hands. It's really amazing. Some musicians out there, yeah, you know, artists, bakers, you know, anybody doing, people working in factories even where they've got to use their hands, that will bring you present. But for the most part, we are not in a presence. But when you take on healing work to consciously transform that pain body from being in charge of your life, you really do have to step into the other world. You have to step into an otherworldly reality, which is now being called like the fourth and the fifth dimensional consciousness. And it's very, very powerful. And there is a mystery about it, which I also love. So there's no real scientific defining of what it is. I think theoretical physicists are doing a better job talking about parallel universes and talking about, you know, what smaller entities than an atom that exist. They talk about string theory. You know, yeah, now we're getting a little closer to what the other world is about. But still, you know, it to me, it's unknowable. It's unfathomable. And that's why it's sacred. Mm. To me, that's what sacrosity is about. Sacrosity is that for me as a human, there is something I can't know. I can learn about, I can understand maybe a little bit of this, but I can't know. Just like with the sun. They don't really understand the sun. They understand what they can figure out, but it's bigger than our human brain can wrap itself around. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. The mystery. And you talked about, going to that unknown land, going into that yes. new world. And I wonder, about ritual and, I wonder if you want to, well, you know what it is, Jojo Pa? Maybe you want to say something about timelines, because when you and I have talked, when you have mentored me, you have asked me, you know, which timeline do I want to be on? You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
do I want to take the lower octave or do I want to go the higher octave? And you know, and just to be, what's that word called? Transparent. I have chosen the lower, the lower octave. I have chosen
and it's a developmental process.
And you said
it's
to me,
it's a developmental process.
And you said to me, you said, well, why did you do that? Because I got on the resentment bus, and you were like, well, why did you do that? And I said, I don't know. I didn't want to get off, Jojo, but I just didn't want to get off.
Too comfortable.
So I guess you could say my pain body was in charge because it was like another thing, and you know, and I didn't want to get off. But then you, when I got back to you, you said, you asked me a question about which octave would I choose, you know what I mean? And so maybe you could talk to us about, do you, if you use this language of timeline, some people say timeline jumping. Right. Tell me what jumping. Your thoughts are about this.
Right. So if we start to realize that as human beings, we are so much more than this material, physical experience, that there is this non-physical, metaphysical experience that we're having at the same time. And that's why we can, as humans, go off and think about things and contemplate and create things in a way that we don't see animals doing. We don't see that same, but we have that. We have this ability to really go into these timelines where there is information for us that goes beyond the physical. And so fourth dimensional timeline is basically intuition. It's the simplest way to understand it, where I'm knowing something, but I didn't read a book and nobody told me it, but it leaps out from inside of me because we all have a soul, right? So that's a timeline. And then above that would be like fifth dimension. And fifth dimension is like telepathy. So now it's not just that I'm getting messages from me without reading or somebody saying it to me in a five sensory way. Telepathy is where I'm actually able to talk to someone, communicate with someone. I may hear their voice, I may not, but I know I'm in communication with them. And they know they're in communication with me, you know. And the experience can be different, but there's definitely that essence of, yeah, this is a connection going on. It's like when people say, oh, I was just thinking about this person and then the phone rang. Yeah, absolutely. So the higher up we go in the timeline zone, the more we're getting connected to our divinity. And what is our divinity? No, we are not God. There's a lot of people that get confused when they talk about the I am presence and all that. You are not God. You will never be God. And you don't want to be God. Let God do God's job. You do your job. You came here for a purpose. You got a sacred contract. You need to focus on that. But the beauty of it is where the choice piece comes in is because we have access to divine consciousness. And divine consciousness is what we aspire to and why we love people like Jesus Christ, why we love the Buddha, why we love Muhammad, why we love even Abraham, you know, why we love Job, you know, why we love Moses, you know, on and on and on, Kuan Yin and all the Buddhistattvas, you know, because these are stories about people who connected with something that wasn't found in the lower timeline of 3D reality. And it gave them a consciousness that let them be able to serve and share with other people. So that's where we're headed to, that it's no longer just about me and my situation, but that I actually am connected to everybody and everything and that I can contribute. You know, that's basic indigenous understanding about what community is. Yeah, that's why you get initiated, so that you can be community centered versus ego centered. And so the ego, yes, it has a place. You have to know, you know, what your 3D consciousness is about and, you know, and what your family is about, what your friends are about, you know, what activities you do are about. Yeah, we need our ego. That's really important. But we don't need it to be running the show because it's limited. And I love Deepak Chopra's anagram for it. He says, explanation of it as an anagram, it's edging God out. Because you start to think that you're in charge. And we know that in Western culture, that is a problem. You know, that's why messing with nuclear energy in the way that it's been done is not okay. And how many more disasters need to happen for us to realize that, you know, that's just, that's not okay. You need to check yourself. There's certain things you need to leave alone. So I talk about the echo, which is engaging cosmic opportunities. So back up into that higher timeline. How am I connecting with my divinity, that part of me that knows the truth about how the universe works? And that, what are we here for? We're here to grow, to heal, and to evolve, and to love, and to be loving. Yeah. And yes, in order to do that, because we're in a duality, we're going to get the opposite of that. But then you do what Martin Luther King said, right? You got to love your enemies. You got to pray for those who would go against you. And why is he saying that? Because he's connected to that higher timeline. He knows the way forward. If you fall into the lower timeline and think that that's going to bring you to your happy endings in life, oh, you're in trouble. And this is so well illustrated by the people we see who are billionaires or millionaires and whose life is just a mess. They are not happy. They're not fulfilled. And so they do crazy things like get an island where they can be sexually aberrant with children. So those are people staying in the lower timeline and not knowing how or choosing to learn how to connect with a higher timeline. So all of that to say is that, you know, we really are here to learn how to ascend in our consciousness during our lifetime. Where I start out as a child should not be where I end up as an elder. I need to be going on journeys of self-mastery, of learning how to love myself and how to share that with other humans. I need to believe that I really can have my happy endings in life. I can have my joy. I can have things work out the way that I need them to. And absent that, yeah, it's not a good day. Not a good day at all.
Okay, so we're gonna take a break here to get to hear a word from our sponsor. Thank you all for listening. We'll be right back.
I want you to come in a little closer, because in the last 3-4 years that I have been apprenticing myself and observing the earth, I've come up with a framework, a way of translating that wisdom so that people like us can apply it to our bodies, to our families, and to our work lives. I'm calling it Regenerate with the Earth. So good. Because, baby girl, I want you to feel good as you do your work. I want you to delight in creating more justice and compassion inside of yourself and also wherever you move. I want us to slow down, to notice all of the support we have for ourselves, our ancestors, our divine support, our treecesters. I mean, we are not in this alone. We are part of a web of oneness that is just dying for us to tap in more deeply and bring it to bear in this present moment. So if any of this sounds good to you, it sounds exciting, sounds like where you need to be, well, then let's have a conversation. I want to talk to you. I want to support you. I want to amplify you. And click on the link below to sign up for a session with me. Don't hesitate. Just click on the link below and let's get started.
Georgia Paw, thank you so much. Now we're going to move into our Q&A. So there are several questions that came in from Mother Tree community members, and please, you just go ahead and answer those as you see fit. The first has to do with the altar. How do you build an altar?
There's no wrong way to make an altar. There's no wrong way. What it is about is setting an intention, because you are setting up a communication system. And you want to do that with reverence. You want to do it in a sacred manner. And sacrosity really means that there's mystery about it. Yeah. That you're leaving something open to be learned. Yeah. So I tell people, start very simply. you know, and then it will grow as and evolve as in the timing that it needs. But you start with, if it's an elemental ritual, you would start with a cloth that is that color or sometimes has those colors in it. So say if I make an ancestor altar with the fire ritual, I'm going to get some red cloth. I'm going to get a red candle that can burn safely. Yeah, because the ancestors get busy sometimes. So make sure you have a safe red candle. Yes, keep it in glass. Keep stuff around it because they get happy, you know. And then an item from that ancestor or a picture and or, you know, that you put on there. And then a place where you lay your questions to them or your requests for guidance, you know, a little piece of paper. Sometimes it's a piece of paper. Sometimes I make a little bowl and I can drop little notes into the bowl. But that's basically it. Very simple, because again, it is more about what the intention is. And that's the vibrational energy that goes out. Now, spirit loves beauty. Spirit loves beauty. And what does that mean? That means that when we take the time to really listen to our creative expression and that we set that intention, I want this to be attractive. I want it to be pleasing to my eyes and to whoever sees it, you know. I want it to be beautiful. And, you know, beautiful comes in many different forms, right? But spirit loves beauty. And so with that intention of simplicity, of beauty, and knowing that it will grow as it needs to over time, yeah, you're on your way to a good altar. Yeah, absolutely. So just you keep it simple and then it just grows. I had an altar in every corner in my house in Milwaukee. Every tabletop, there was altars all over the place, you know, because it would just call me and just like, okay, we need something here. Okay. You know, you start out very minimally. So, and altars, again, that becomes a portal, like I said, a communication place. So you treat it with honor. And some altars you don't keep in the bedroom where you have intimate relationships, because that energy of intimate relationships, which again in Western culture we don't talk about enough, but it's really connected to really, really powerful energies in the cosmos. And so you keep your altar in another place rather than a place where you're going to be physically intimate with another human being. You also keep them where they are not going to be, you know, treat it like it's just part of the furniture or something like that. You know, you want it to be someplace that is sacred. It stands out. It's, you know, somebody would come in and know immediately, ooh, don't touch that. That's, there's something powerful. I don't understand it, but I know that that's not something I need to be touching, you know. So you really want to give it, honor it with that, because it is, it's a portal for you that will bring you information, bring you energies to support you in what? Yeah, staying grounded and in the truth of who you are. That's what we all need right now, right? Absolutely. Yeah. So how is the dagger medicine wheel relevant today? That to me is it. It is what I use so that I don't have to take serotonin or any kind of antidepressant medication. Mm-hmm. It is an interrupter of the neurological patterns that my job is to heal and to break through from my core wound, from other things that have occurred in my life, right? All my traumas, trauma, drama, rama. And so this medicine, because it operates at such a high vibration, is really a wonderful anecdote to turning to pharmaceuticals and some other things that, can I say this, like, you know, it can get to a point where they stop working. You know, it's like your body will adjust, right? And then it's like you need a little more and then you leave a little more. And what's so beautiful about the Dagra medicine wheel and what it represents It's just really helping us really learn that we can transform the energies. We can transform pain. We don't have to maintain it. In Western culture, we do a lot of maintenance of pain. Aren't those places called our managing pain, pain management centers? Like, why are you managing that stuff? You need to transform it. I'm managing it. I'm supposed to be managing pain. I don't need no manager, no pain. I don't want to be in charge of that. I don't want to go, you know? And that's what the medicine wheel brings to us, because ultimately, you know, pain is a teacher. It comes to teach us. It comes to tell us something. It's an energetic that really is doing that. And so it wants to leave its, it wants to give its message and leave. It does not want to hang around. It's got other work to do. So when we use that perception of what pain, especially emotional pain, is really about, what it's for, then we can free ourselves up from going down the hole with some of these more modern ways of that management of pain. We can actually get ourselves freed up from it. I think the other relevant thing I'd say about the Dagger Medicine Wheel, really important for me in the times we're in, is that it really supports what unity consciousness, what diversity, equity, and inclusion and belonging is really about. Because a wheel represents these five separate entities, energies, right? That there's no hierarchy with them. Fire's not better than water. You know, earth isn't better than mineral. They're different. You know, and they actually evolve from each other, you know, if you read the creation story, right? So there's no hierarchy, and it's about mutual respect and honoring that what is different from me is needed so that we have this harmony and we have this balance. And when I've used the wheel with the men that I work with, or others, but definitely with the men, what it did is it freed them up from having to compare themselves to someone in order to feel good about themselves. They now had an essential understanding of who they were. And I write about in the book about Max, you know, when he finds out he's a peacemaker, you know, water person. Oh my God. It was just like a whole new world opened up to him. He understood a part of himself that he couldn't understand. And so to me, the Dagger Medicine Wheel does that. It gives us a way to claim our uniqueness and to understand and value it, to understand difference, diversity is essential, that that's what's going to keep us in balance cosmically and on this planet, and also keep the creative juices flowing. Yeah, because you need all those different elements, right, to keep moving things around for there to be life, essentially. Yeah. So those are the things that I feel are really powerful with that wheel. Now, why is the Dagger Medicine Wheel set up the way it is? It's a great question. And it's based on, it really is that that elemental, that creation story. It's set up on the creation story. And it is, I asked my teacher, I asked Maladoma, I said, Maladoma, where does this information come from? Yeah, this is Egypt. It all comes from Egypt. And so when somebody tells me something comes from Egypt, then I know that this is stuff beyond our human understanding. And so the medicine wheel and the way it's designed and why it's designed, that wisdom is so ancient and so cosmic. There's a reason why the South is connected with fire. There's a reason why the North is connected with cold, right? There's a reason for that, this pole that we have in the earth, you know, the directions, there's reasons for that. There's something important about why the West is where the sun goes down and why the East is where it rises, you know, why things are cyclical. You know, there are no straight lines in space. That's what that James Webb telescope, along with the Hubble, is really, really letting us know. Linear is something we made up as humans. Why? Because we want to be in control. You know, nature is too out of control. Like what's going on here in Southern California with this rain, you know, so it has people really upset. But this is the nature of our existence. You know, you really don't know. We convince ourselves we know, but we really don't know. But there's this ancient wisdom, this cosmic knowledge that was given to us, given to humans. Why? Yeah, to help us thrive, to help us be able to be here and to stay here. So I call it cosmic law. The agri-medicine wheel is set up in cosmic law, and it works. Like if I were to put fire where water is, it wouldn't work. Something would be out of control. And that's something, too, that the theoretical physicists and astrologers and scientists have found out when they're studying how the universe works, how this earth works. And they found out that things like the spin on the earth, how it's tilted, our distance between us and the sun, the distance between us and Jupiter, you know, like all of these different variables are why we can be here and have the life we have. They really haven't found any other blue planets in our solar system. And even in other solar systems that they're seeing into, they're not getting the vibrational, you know, radar light energy that says to them, this really is like Earth. Or if it seems like Earth, they always find that there's something that's just not exactly the same. And so what does that mean? That means that there really is a greater order and direction that knows what it's doing and has given us precise measurements for how to be here and be alive. That's why thinking about going to Mars to me is such a waste of time. It really is. Put that money into how do we make sure children are fed and how we don't have wars anymore that, you know, are taking people's lives. There's enough stuff that can happen naturally for people to die. We don't have to be creating war, you know. But anyway, so again, there is this beautiful mystery to the medicine wheel. There's a beautiful mystery to us as humans. And that's also what I love about indigenous wisdom, that it keeps us in the sacred, in the realm of sacrality. Because once we think we know, oh, we're in trouble. We are in so much trouble. It's not funny. Now, are ancestors and divine helpers the same? That's a great question. And the answer is no, they are not. there are many variants of, you know, spirit guides and helpers. And so I would say the ancestors are one. What's different with the ancestors are these are entities who've had their time walking the earth plane. So they know what the difference is like. Because when you're in your real spiritual self, there is no opposites. You know, it's a unified plane, a unified existence. You can like, you get an understanding of it, but if you've not experienced it, you really don't know. That's why people are lined up to come to Earth. That's what Melodoma told me. So, oh yeah, it was lined up. Everyone lined up. They want to all come down here to Earth because then you get to feel these opposites. You get to see the difference. And as Deepak Chopra said from the Vedic teachings, a man born blind at birth can never know darkness because he's never known light. Yeah. And so the earth is where people's souls come to grow. And so the ancestors become the special group of divine helpers who have had the experience. And that's why they're such important guides for us. That's why they say, don't go down that road. Don't go that way, Jojo Pop. Yeah, this one, yeah, you can go over here. Like they know. And that's why I tell people those ancestors who are the black sheep of the family, the people who were walking the womb, those are some of your best spirit guides because they went there. They know, they get it. Yeah, absolutely. And so there are so many divine helpers. I don't even think we experience all of who and what they are. That's why when anybody tells me that I saw this, this showed up, and this and that, I'd be like, yeah, yeah, believe it. Because I would say that that's not real. If you're having that experience and you're feeling this is a loving presence, this is a helper, yeah, it's real. However it shows up, like a blue light, a green light, you know, whatever. It's all good. How do we recreate the village today? That's beautiful. Number one, you're never going to recreate the village in the way it was before because the universe is cyclical, okay? It's meant to you experience this thing, and then we're going to go up the ladder.
So we can get the essence of village. That's what we can recreate. And what is village life really about? I'll tell you, the first thing it's about is that you're clear. You are so clear that your existence is to contribute to that village. See, that's what initiation is about. It takes you away from it's just me and it's just my family. Now it's about others. Yeah, that I have a responsibility that what I say, what I do, what I think impacts other people around me. Because again, we're vibrational creatures, you know. So as I'm moving around, if I'm not checking myself and watching how I'm feeling and how I'm doing, if I'm just going to unconsciously transfer my pain, that's not making a good contribution to the village. That's why Sobhanfu talked about how, in my village, we either doing ritual, just finished doing ritual, planning ritual, about to do ritual. She's like, you know, because this is the way in which they keep the emotional toxins from taking over. This is how they keep the emotional toxins from taking over. So to me, recreating the village is more about, okay, what's the essence of what needs to happen here? Okay, that I'm clear that my job is to be making a contribution, not just taking, but I have to be giving. And I need to be clear about the ways that I give. And I also need reciprocity. So I need to be allow myself to receive. That's how we keep balance. The other thing is that the village is a place where you get supported in transforming your emotional toxins. There is nothing like community ritual. There's nothing like it. It's just delicious and wonderful. And you get so transformed and you get so open. You get so moved when we can do that. So how do we do that more? How do we come together more? And to me, a ritual is when we sit down and we share a meal and we're willing to be inclusive and have an open conversation and allow people to speak and allow people to be seen, allow people to be heard, that we're loving on each other. You know, that to me is a village. That's when you're doing ritual. It's also too about legacy. You know, you're contributing to what's going on now, but you're also contributing to those who are going to be there after you're gone. And so what do I need to do to make sure that I'm giving back so that the seventh generation that comes after me, this is from the First Nations people, have, you know, something to, some foundation to build upon, you know, some information to build upon. How do I make sure that there is a legacy going on? That's also village. I think the other important thing about village that I would say for, especially in the dark ages of modernity that we are navigating through as we're moving toward this beautiful age of illumination, age of Aquarius, is to really, really do our work to heal ancestral wounds. And we do need village for that. Yes, I can do my things personally, but I really need a collective commitment for people to be willing to take that on. And then that will ripple out so that more of us can get beyond these boundaries and these barriers that ancestral and historical trauma has created for so many people. You know, what's going on with Israel and Gaza, that is historical trauma. And getting to see how people are bound to that story, to that belief system. Yeah. And that's why it's popped up, too, because we're supposed to be working on those wounds. And then somebody asked, holding space for someone rather than saving them, because that's another important, I'll call it a skill that you need to have if you're going to have a healthy community. Because functional community is about interdependence, not codependence. Yeah. Yeah. Interdependence. That means that I self-master, I take on full responsibility for who and what I am, what I think, what I say, what I do. I don't make anybody responsible for that. I've let go of victim consciousness. The world is out to gift me, not get me, right? And then everyone committing to that level of consciousness, right? Yeah, that's holding space. That's holding space. Feeling sorry for someone is when you go into that savior mode. And we don't realize, too, that, you know, we're saving people every day just by showing up, being in gratitude, being with an open heart, thinking in the positive, choosing that love over fear. Oh, you're saving a lot of people just doing that. That's what it's really, that's how you really save someone. If you need to, if you get called to take on some more three-dimensional behaviors, you just want to make sure it's in alignment. And what does that mean? That means that I'm called to do it. I really feel like I have to do this. I can do it. You know, it's not like it's really work for me. It's like, yeah, I got this. I can do this. And that I'm not looking for anything in return. Yeah. Because once you set a condition on it, the predator got you. The devil got you. That's what we call the devil. The devil, the predator, that energy. The dark matter energy, that's what it's called. That energy that's designed to do what? Yeah, pull you apart, pull you out of your spirit. So we need gravity. And that's the other thing that, you know, community does for us. It gives us a grounding. It gives us a gravity, holds us in. I'm sorry, I've talked until it's like 4 minutes before we have to finish, but I wanted to ask if there were any questions. And oh my God.
You killed it. Yes.
You rocked that, man. Oh my God.
I'm just glad it's going to be recorded because it was so much good wisdom.
Yes, thank you.
Oh my God, my pleasure. I can't tell you. I have to tell you all this. Earlier last year, by the middle of last year, I had gone off my tracks in terms of how I thought I was needing to serve, because I've been in human services for so long. And so I was doing a project, and I really got to a point to realize that I was over people's head. That they weren't really ready to take in the information. And so I pulled myself out of the project because I realized, like, you know, that will be painful. You're trying to get them to be what they're not ready to be. Just let it go. Leave it alone. You know, so I did. I gracefully exited from that. And then I recommitted myself to being a full-time shaman and to stop. I was an organizational development consultant that really I'm a full-time shaman. And if I do some organizational development, they got to learn the medicine wheel. If they don't want to learn the medicine wheel, then I can't be there. So you all are part of this validation that spirit has been giving me since August that says, see, when you recommit to doing what you're supposed to be doing, we will send you the people who can receive the information to take it in and to use it, you know. And that's the other beautiful thing, a message I want to say to you. Please, please know, use my book, take it, adapt it, use it however you feel called to do. This isn't plagiarism. Otherwise, I'm in trouble because this is ancient wisdom from people that came from Burkina Faso, from the village of Dano. And every day I'm using this. Yeah, I'm taking something, but I'm also giving something back because this enlivens them that this medicine can still be of service.
Thank you so much for staying on till the end of this interview. If you found something here that you liked, something that inspired you or made you pause, please pass on this episode to someone else or follow us on Apple. Leave us review on Apple or some stars on Spotify. When you do that, you help us to be discovered by others. And when other people find this who need this perspective, this Mother Tree Network perspective, then we all win. So until next time, Happy Lunar New Year. Peace.